So, acoustic folk duo The Sea the Sea are coming back to the Mountain State this month to play a couple shows. If the name sounds familiar, there's a few reasons why it might be. It may be because they played a couple times on NPR's Mountain Stage, maybe it's because one of the band members is a Charleston, West Virginia native, or it might just be because they play really good music. Regardless, I sat down with Mira Stanley and Chuck E. Costa from the band to chat about their new record, their thoughts on music streaming as an indie band, and their connection to the Mountain State.
Are we young? Are we love? Are we love? Are we?
Thank you guys so much for taking the time to talk with me. And I'm excited you guys are coming back to Charleston. This is, what, your first time in a while that you've been playing here?
Yeah, I think the last time that we were there might have and played a show might have been for Mountain Stage last year.
Yeah.
We came and we were part of the West Virginia Poetry Out Loud Conference. We got to work with the kids that week and came to the Cultural Center, but the last time we played was when Tim O'Brien was guest hosting the show. I believe that was the last time.
Yeah, and that was last, I guess that was last May.
It's been almost a year.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Oh, it's like a one-year anniversary. How cute.
I know.
But Mira, you're actually from Charleston, right? You're born and raised here?
Yeah, I was born in Charleston, and then I lived for the first few years of my life in Parkersburg, and then when I was seven, we moved to Charleston and went to school there, and was born and raised.
Yeah, well, I'm actually a Charleston native too, so it's interesting. I haven't really moved out of the city, let alone the state, and I'm 23. How is it for you, like living past Charleston now? I mean, I guess you guys are you guys in New York? Where are you guys right now?
Split our time between, we do spend some time in West Virginia, but we, right now we're sort of caretaking a place in upstate New York. And
it's a place my family, I've been coming up here since I was a kid, and so it's near, yeah, up in the Berkshires, and it snows.
It's snowing right now.
No way.
Happy about, we just spent a month down in Austin and thought that spring would have finally arrived, but it's snowing. But, I mean, I would say, I think when I left Charleston, it was for school. I was really into musical theater and dance, and went to Boston to pursue musical theater. And so most of my moves and things were sort of intertwined with what I was pursuing. And then I just sort of got curious, to see different. I lived in Colorado for a year and in New Mexico for a summer, and then I ended up finishing school in Michigan. But what was amazing is that I pretty much almost anywhere that I moved, I sort of found somebody from West Virginia. It would always sort of seem like, I would say where I was from, and somebody would say, "Oh, well, I have another friend from West Virginia," and then I always sort of found that community away. But I had that sort of, angsty sort of teenager, I want to go somewhere else. And then I think every time that I was moved somewhere else, I found really amazing things about it. But it sort of made me appreciate, I think, Charleston and West Virginia in general in a different way.
And Chuck, are you from Charleston, or where are you from exactly?
I actually grew up in New York, in the city, I was born and raised, I was in Staten Island, and I lived there until high school. I lived in New Jersey for a few years before college, and then I went to Colorado for college, and then ended up living in Connecticut after that.
Whoa.
For a few years, and so, and I was touring a bunch before Mira and I were together, just kind of bouncing around, doing a solo thing for a while, so I actually never... I'd only driven through West Virginia, like the little, I don't know what the part you call it, that like...
Oh, Interstate 64?
It takes like 20 minutes to drive through when you're on the, on the interstate. That was the only experience I had of West Virginia, and now it just feels like a kind of a second home. It's I've experienced so much of it through Mira and her family at this point that it's hard to imagine that it's only been 4 years or so since I'd spent any real time there. And I love it. I always tell Mira, my mom is from Norway. I always tell Mira that I spent a lot of time there growing up in the summers with my grandparents. And West Virginia is very similar in the sort of the ruggedness and just like kind of there's like the mountainy culture, you know, in certain ways. And anyway, it brings me back.
Winding roads and tunnels.
the real, like, the two-lane sketch or just scary roads at times.
That's it can be sketchy, too, yeah.
In Norway, so, yeah.
Oh, well, actually, that's funny, too. I've went to Sweden once, and the big thing I can remember about when I was there was that there's a great sense of hospitality, and I think that's also something you definitely see in West Virginia. It's just
Absolutely.
This kind of like happiness, you know, and openness to, you know, say hi to you and smile and ask how you're doing. And also, you know, if you need help or something, it's like, come stay with me. We have a great feast going on, like all kinds of good home cooking. So
Absolutely.
I can see that too.
And I totally agree. And I think that there's such a, it's like a distinct culture in West Virginia that was something I hadn't really experienced. It's such a mix of different like pieces of other parts of the country I'd been to. Like it's got the southern thing, but it's not that completely like, and that's something again, like in Norway, it was just like this new culture that I experienced, but one that was, like you said, totally open. And it's such a beautiful thing when that happens. When you get to kind of be welcomed into a new place.
We always sort of joke that a lot of times we'll take a long, you know, on the road, we'll drive from the northeast down to the south, and it's like the closer to West Virginia you get, like the nicer people start to be on the road. Like people will let you pass in front of them or just give you room to like merge into a lane or something. So
or the wait staff in a restaurant, they get a little bit more friendly.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, well, I guess that's something nice about it. I kind of take it for granted because it's just part of me now. It's part of where I live. But yeah, I guess if you go up to like Connecticut, or not saying Connecticut people aren't nice or New York people, but I think they have a different kind of lifestyle.
A little rougher on the edges, I'd say.
Yeah, just a little bit. They're still as nice and still as pretty up there. But I think you're right. There's definitely it's a happy little difference, and I think it's something we can enjoy, especially if we're out of town. Well, that's cool. So you guys mentioned, I mean, you know, Mira, you're from West Virginia. Chuck, you're from New York. How were you guys, how did the sea form then?
Well, it's interesting. We actually met in West Virginia, and we met a couple of years before we started playing together. We were at the Mountain Stage New Song Festival back when it was like a festival in Shepherdstown, and I was there sort of volunteering as a stage manager, and Chuck was a contestant in the songwriting contest. And so when we met, I was holding a sign that had his name on it, letting him know that it was time for him to come up and get ready to sing.
And apparently I did a pretty good job because Mira like was into the song, and then we talked afterwards, and she said she was a singer. And so we ended up singing, you know, a bit after that, just kind of for fun, but we both really noted the sort of blend, the vocal blend that we have, and hadn't really experienced that before. So that kind of opened the door, but it took a few years for us to actually, for the timing to be right for us both to kind of dive into what's now the C2C.
Yeah, and I had gone back, you know, to finish school and sort of came to the conclusion that I really wanted to play music. And when I reached out to Chuck, he was at a place where he was sort of ready to transition from being a solo performer, and it just seemed like a really good fit, and because we really connected as people too, and it just felt like a collaboration waiting to happen. So,
and since then, you guys have been together. What have the roles been like for you all? Like, what, Mira, do you do one thing and Chuck does the other? Is it just collaborative all over the place? Like, how do you divide the roles?
Collaborative all over the place, and I think it's something that's constantly evolving. You know, when we were,
let's just say we when we talk a lot to other duos and bands in general, people, or even venues and people, like, you know, talk to bands when they come through, everyone always says, so who's, you know, just kind of assume, like, who's the numbers person, who's, like, the, you know,
who's the songwriter, or who...
Yeah, and it's just, there are really no boundaries. I mean, we definitely both have some strengths and weaknesses that the other doesn't have, but in general, we kind of hand off a lot of different things at different times, and from the writing of the songs to the, I mean, even on stage, like, we are swapping instruments all the time, like, from electric to acoustic guitar to the keyboards and percussion. Like, we, yeah, I don't know. It's cool. It really does keep it, it keeps it interesting, and I think it keeps us moving. Like, one of us is never getting stuck with, like, one job that gets, you know,
monotonous.
Yeah, and that's helpful, I think.
And it was interesting, well, when we first started playing together, it was more like I was sort of singing harmonies to songs that Chuck had written, but that was mostly because I hadn't sort of written any songs that I wanted to play out at that point. But since then, like, when we were getting all of our songs together to start recording our first record, Love We Are We Love, we sent off probably, like, 25 songs to our producer, Todd, and he sort of sent us back, I guess, like, 14 or 15 that he really wanted to work on. And it was amazing. It was like a third songs that we had written completely together, a third songs that Chuck had written, and a third songs that I had written, which was something that we had sort of wanted to strive for, but we thought that was pretty funny how that sort of came together.
Well, it's nice that you guys are able to, I guess, you trust each other and you respect one another. You're able to do a lot of things together, because I feel like there's still that whole duo concept where, you're right, it's almost like one side does more work, and then maybe there's, like, some disgruntled feelings on the other side, and it sounds like you just have a totally positive relationship.
Yeah, it feels, you know, it feels really important, you know, when you have, you know, maybe some people get inspired by sort of having collaborations where they butt heads, and for us, I think, like, before we played together, Chuck had really never sung harmonies, and I had never really written, neither of us had ever really written with anyone else, and it felt really important to us to sort of always feel like we had, you know, the creative process, it can be so easy to get those sort of, like, negative, like, critic voices that pop in your head, and just, I think, keeping it a safe place where you can play somebody your silly, like, voice memo recordings of melodies and lyrics that you're coming up with that may sound totally terrible, but if you have somebody there who's willing to listen to them with you and sort of hear them for their potential or just, like, work through it, I think it comes up, or it makes for, like, a really good and productive sort of creative situation.
Yeah. So how would you guys describe your sound? Is there a signature, the C sound? Is there, like, a word or a phrase that would describe what you play?
It's interesting because it's been evolving a lot. And I would say, like, you know, we're pretty much always, we sort of say at the core of what we do is, like, it's harmony-based and lyric-based in a lot of ways.
And I think our go-to with sort of genre is indie folk. And I think the reason we always go back to that, at least for now, is that, you know, the folk part of it is definitely, like, how it's roots-based. It's based in songs that are, you know, kind of are based in, you know, the folk tradition with, you know, a lot of times we write on acoustic guitar and we play a lot on the acoustic guitar. And so we have that foundation pretty much in all of our songs. But the indie part is the part where we are kind of in a discovery place right now where we're adding, you know, electric guitar and percussion and lots of other keyboard and lots of other things. And we're actually recording some singles now that there's maybe no acoustic guitar in. And so I think, you know, we like pushing, you know, that side of it and not sticking to, like, an acoustic duo format, just because it's, for us, that's what, you know, kind of keeps us inspired and everything. So I would, like, our vocal harmony and the songwriting will always be the sort of foundation of whatever, however our sound evolves.
Are there birds that fly
Well, your record, your 2014 debut is just absolutely gorgeous. Like, it's so pretty. It's weird to say it's so pretty because you can't see it, but it sounds so pretty, and it's great. It's ear captivating. And how much work did you guys have to put into making it?
It was a really big undertaking, and we wanted to do, it was like our first record, and there were a lot of things that we were learning, but we sort of wanted to do it the best that we could, like on every single level, if even just to sort of make it a learning process for ourselves. So we worked with a producer, Todd Sikafoos, who we really loved, and we flew out to San Francisco and recorded at a studio called Fantasy Studios.
And that process was like, you know, we didn't know Todd before then. We loved a few of the albums he had made, and he worked with Anais Mitchell, and he plays bass with Ani DeFranco. So he was somebody who we just like really wanted to work with, but had no idea how to kind of connect with. And so it took a few moves to like make that, you know, connection and build that relationship. And he was living in Brooklyn at the time, and then he had just moved to San Francisco. So that was a whole other thing where we decided, okay, let's like make this, because he heard our, we played him some songs, and he wanted to do the record, but he had just moved. So we were like, let's just go. We'll go out there and make it an adventure. And it was. We were there for 2 weeks, and so that was a whole other phase of sort of making the record. And then after that, it was we spent a whole year kind of figuring out how to release it, which was a whole like kind of the back end business side of it. We were just kind of learning what it takes, and you know, without a record label, kind of how to just release it beyond just putting it up on your website and having it at your shows. And so that was.
So we did like a crowdfunding campaign for a proper release, and you know, booked a release tour, and you know, worked with radio promoters and all of that. And so, yeah, I think we learned a lot, and it was a lot of work. And it's funny, I always think anyone who calls like a musician lazy ever like doesn't really know one.
Well, did you guys, I mean, were you, when you were doing it, were you also doing a lot of streaming stuff? I mean, I guess Spotify maybe wasn't as big as it is now, but was that a consideration too?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, and Spotify is an example of something we've embraced from like day one. And because a lot of people who aren't a little, you know, or I mean, you know, in general, I guess there's a lot of people who have mixed feelings about it, or are very sort of anti, or it's like there's, and you know, in terms of getting paid for your money or your music, and we feel that it can be both. I mean, it's a huge, for us, it's a huge discovery tool. Like people, we've embraced it from the beginning and got on some of Spotify's playlists and have gotten tons of new fans through Spotify. And we get a lot of plays there, but that was something that we kind of had to work on pushing, not just Spotify, but other streaming, sites, and just embracing it, because, you know, we are doing it for a living, so we can't just give our music away. But there are, you know, the whole new structure of the music business, there are ways, if you're embracing it and not fighting the new way in terms of digital music, you know, you can still get paid, and it can be a part of your business and a part of your musical structure, like your business structure. So yeah, that's been a big part. But we've been trying to do like both the traditional, as much as we can, traditional release, doing like radio promotion and all that, and doing like real press, but then also just, yeah, doing all the online stuff too.
Just thinking about the streaming thing, I mean, recently, in like, I guess the last couple of days, Jay-Z had that huge Tidal music flop where I guess he was kind of building up this Spotify-like platform of getting people and musicians involved in it, and then they could be paid more than, say, Spotify. Because so far as I know, Spotify's, it's good for exposure, but maybe not so good on actually paying the artists for their work. And then this Tidal music project just flopped completely. So I'm interested to see how an independent group like yourselves, you know, you're able to use Spotify, but also be paid for the music.
We have a very different perspective, it seems, than a lot of our peers, at least. I mean, we, in terms of that, because we, think that we've gotten luck on Spotify, it seems, and we can't really pin down exactly. There's no sort of necessarily like a way you get put on their playlists and all that stuff, because that's the music that gets the most exposure unless you're, you know, super famous already. And that kind of exposure for us has been, you know, has led to, you know, our single, The Love We Are We Love, we just went over like 1.5 million plays in the last year. And so for us, without a record label as a middleman with Spotify, we actually get a decent paycheck from Spotify. But I think one of the misconceptions about Spotify is that they don't pay out fairly, but I think more accurately it's that a lot of artists who aren't getting, you know, hundreds of millions of plays, but maybe say a few million plays or something, or even a few hundred thousand plays on Spotify, are going through a record label that's getting a bigger chunk of that. It may be a small pie, but the record label is taking more of it and giving the artist sort of maybe a small percentage of the percentage they've already gotten from Spotify. So long story short, it's like, because we're working directly with Spotify and we get 100% of all of the revenue, it actually does turn out to be like
something
that makes a difference for us financially. It's not, we can't live off of it or anything like that, but it does make a difference. And so we are like, we're excited to just keep moving, you know, in that direction, and hopefully, you know, for at least a while work on our own. And
I think it's different too, like with somebody like Jay-Z or like Taylor Swift or Madonna or, you know, some of these people who are involved. I think it's a very different thing when you have already like a fan base that is like multi-millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have, I think, a lot more of a flexibility and sort of a choice with how you want to release your music and still have a huge audience to receive it. And so I think that, you know, we've had people come to our, or sort of, you know, be in a club or something before one of our shows, and then they were like planning to leave, and then they stepped out and pulled up Spotify and listened to our music and came back in and bought a ticket to the show. And so there's something, I think, to be said about that, because I think there's, you know, the music industry is so saturated with so many different artists that it takes a lot just to get people to hear you, and a lot of times people don't want to even pay the 99 cents or whatever just to sort of give a song a chance. And so if somebody can listen to it and then they become, you know, a lifelong fan and come and pick up a T-shirt and come to a show and tell their friends about it, then all of that seems incredibly worth it.
Yeah.
And not to say that it couldn't be better, but at least as a thing that's in the world now, it seems for the most part to be a positive thing, at least in our experience.
Yeah.
And it seems important not to resist it, because, you know, Spotify has been working, I mean, for years trying to make their service better. And in our eyes, like, they seem to be genuinely trying. And something like Tidal seems more of a it's just like a quicker fix or more of like a kind of, I don't know.
Like maybe they threw a lot of money and power on it without thinking it through so much.
Yeah, yeah, because it seems to be a thing that there is no, if there were an easy answer, I think it would have been, somebody would be doing it like in that. It's just,
and that's not
that
to say that it shouldn't be tried,
out.
You know, I think it's good that there's a conversation, like there's some sort of, you know, dialogue happening and between artists. And but then it's funny when you think about it too, because a lot of these bigger artists who are involved have already had millions of dollars sort of put in to their careers to sort of give themselves that bigger audience. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I've talked a lot about this. It's very, in my case, I use it, and I even have like a change of tune Spotify for my radio show, because if people can't tune in at a particular time at night on a Saturday to listen to the show, at least I want to give them an opportunity to hear what they missed and, you know, check out the artists that I played on the show that they may be interested in. But, you know, it makes me think it's great for me. I can use it. People love Spotify and they can do all kinds of stuff with it. But for the artist, it's just, I don't know, I feel kind of bad. Like, there should be a better way of me supporting the artist and making their name known other than Spotify? Like,
it's funny that part of what made us advocates from the beginning of Spotify is that before we were even a band, when it was brand new, Spotify, when it first came here, I used it for a weekend. I remember, and I thought it was like I had the premium service or whatever, because I was able to listen to anything I wanted to, you know, stream it on my phone, and it was like, I can't believe how amazing this is. This is like the most amazing service, and it blew my mind. And as a musician, I was like, this is probably evil. Like, I shouldn't be doing this. And then I realized I had to pay, you know, at the end of the weekend, I realized it was like, okay, now you can only, at the time, you can only stream it on your, you know, on your computer and
thing.
And I paid instantly. I was like, this is totally worth it. I paid the $10 a month because I just knew that I'm a music lover, and this was such an amazing thing, and it's out there in the world. Everyone's going to use it anyway because it's there. And so instantly I felt like this is the way things are going to go, and I don't want to feel... You know, if I would use this as a consumer, I have to figure out a way to try to, you know, be a part of it on the other end too as a musician. Even though, like, you know, like we've been saying, I mean, it's definitely a learning curve for the industry, but I do think it's moving in a better direction.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what the next Spotify will be, because I feel like Spotify has a nice niche right now, but I mean, I just wonder what the next thing is going to be that's going to overcome that. Because for the time, I mean, iTunes was huge. I'm not sure if it's still a big powerhouse, but I feel like Spotify is kind of taking over in terms of music discovery.
Yeah.
So what's going to be the next big thing? Who knows? But hopefully it'll pay you for it so you guys can get some money from it. But yeah, I mean, I love it. It's always interesting just to hear from you all, like just independent artists, like what they think about it, because it could be a love-hate relationship. But at least in your case, it sounds like since you're in charge of your music, you're actually benefiting from it. And so that's great to hear.
And I think too, you know, I think people who love music, people appreciate artists. And I think that because this discussion has been out there, you know, we get emails from people who say, I've been listening to your record on Spotify all year, and so I want to buy a physical copy now.
Aww.
Or just things like that, where I think people are aware of it, and that ultimately, you know, fans of your music are still going to want to, you know, get a CD, even if they don't have a CD player in their car or on their computer anymore, just maybe to get it signed and have it as a physical thing in the world.
Yeah. Well, that's good that they understand that if they don't support you all, if they're only going through Spotify, then you guys can't, you know, sustain yourselves off Spotify alone. So it's good that your fans are realizing that, and they should support physical work and seeing you live too. Because,
yeah.
You know, some people, I mean, young people, like I do this too. It's just you listen to something, you're like, oh, cool, I'm just going to listen to it because it's free. And then later on, you're like, oh, I wish I could hear more. Where is their stuff? Maybe they disbanded because I wasn't supporting them. So, you know, not pointing any fingers or anything, but sometimes it's our fault. It takes a while to realize that. We don't know what we have until it's gone. But on that positive note, so with you all, you mentioned before Mountain Stage, and actually you guys were on Mountain Stage, I think, in 2013. Time flies. It's crazy.
I know. Yeah, that was our first time. 2013 and 2014.
Yeah, and that's just, I mean, for you, Mira, because you're the daughter of Ron Soul, who's an awesome person in general and music. I mean, I guess growing up with Mountain Stage by your side, did you ever feel like, okay, it's kind of a given, I'm going to get on the show one day? Or was it just always?
No, not at all. In fact, I auditioned for the show. Well, I've auditioned for the show a couple of times when I was younger, but I remember also one year they had like a Christmas special, and I was going through my like Annie phase where I was listening to lots of like musical theater, like belting songs.
Aww.
I auditioned to be part of the children's chorus, and I couldn't sing quiet enough to blend
Aww.
With everyone. And so I sat in the wings and watched all the children's chorus go out and sing and on the show. And I thought that was like my one big chance. But it's funny because until I started playing music, I always knew that it was a really special place full of incredibly special people, but I don't think I quite understood sort of what it was and so sort of its place in the musical world.
Because you're just a part of it. You, like, you lived with it.
Just sort of like a family and a place where, and you know, where my dad went to go to work. And I think then the more that I started to sort of understand what Mountain Stage was, the more I wanted to be a part of it, but I also wanted to wait until it was the right time and sort of got an invitation to be a part of it. And then when that happened, that felt really good, and it felt sort of like the way it was supposed to happen, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I just wondered if, since, I mean, you're around it so much, if it was just, if it was harder to even try to get in because, you know, there's higher expectations. Like, I guess just because, I don't know, maybe like if you're best friends with someone, or and then their kid sister is involved, or their kid brother, and the kid brother grows up and they have a crush on the person. That's a really weird analogy. But what I'm trying to get at is just you maybe can't see someone beyond just their family status. And so maybe it was harder for Mountain Stage to...
When we first started playing together, we were spending a lot of time in West Virginia. So on any given Sunday, we would go to the show and just, you know, hang out with Ron in between sets and just kind of
and
watch
see
the
music,
show.
Yeah.
It was a really amazing thing. And so we'd be around everybody, but, and, you know, everybody knew we had a band, but, like, it wasn't something we would really, we were very kind of, like, we decided we weren't going to ask, you know, like, we were never going to ask to be on the show just because we didn't want to put anybody in a position that they would, you know, would be uncomfortable. Because of the whole connection, and it just, you know, and we know that we made, you know, it took until we recorded our album and were able to play it
for Larry.
He genuinely liked it, and like really, you know, his joke about it, and he said this in the intro when we were on the show, is that when Mira was a kid, she sang a song and her quote unquote first audition, and he said, don't call us, we'll call you. Was his joke, and then he said it took 20 years, and then he did call.
Yeah, and I was listening to that before we talked, before our chat began, and I think that was really sweet, and you guys did a great job on the show, and I think that's a nice accomplishment that you all were maybe not working up to this, but you were able to be a part of it because of your talents alone, and it just so happened that you have a great dad, Mira.
And that's a big deal for us.
It was a big
sure.
deal for us, and it gave us our first sort of international audience, too, and we felt that a lot, and we've since met a lot of people who have come to shows because they heard us on Mountain Stage either time, and it's an interesting thing, you know, like when you're a musician, your community is full of people who are sort of in different parts of their careers and experiencing different, you know, degrees of success at any given time, and I think you come to sort of appreciate, you know, what it takes to build something that is really meaningful and established in the music world, and you know, you just sort of that it's not, you know, that when it's time for you to be a part of those things or play a show with somebody or get to play at a certain venue or whatever, that those happen at the right times when you're ready for them.